You are now listening to The Air Raid, a podcast put on by the writers of Viva the Matadors, an SB Nation site covering everything Texas Tech athletics.
Hey everybody, it is Wes with Viva the Matadors back again for, I believe we're all the way up to a half a dozen episodes of The Air Raid podcast. I've got Hunter Cook here with me to chat today. What's up, Hunter?
How you doing?
I am all right. I think this is going to be just a quick heads up. I think this will probably be our last podcast until we get into fall camp or maybe the beginning of fall camp, which kicks off the first week of August. I think the 6th. I could be wrong on that. It could be a day or two. Either way, different. But right around then, we'll probably start kicking off the podcast again. Until that point, we probably feel... We do feel that it's a little unnecessary to keep rehashing the same off-season dribble. You guys are probably tired of hearing about it. I know Hunter and I are tired of talking about it. We're ready to watch some football as opposed to sit here and talk about it every week. But we've got just a couple of questions that we will roll through today. And then, like we said, we'll talk to you guys come fall camp time. So, Hunter, here you go. First question. Jet Duffy was at Elite 11 this week. It sounds like he did all right. I watched some of his highlights. He looked good. Man, I tell you, the biggest thing I came away with is how impressive the quarterbacks are from a mechanic standpoint than they were 10 years ago, 15 years ago. It's from the 7-on-7s. It's from the... better coach and the one-on-one coach and these guys get that, you know, 15 years ago, that type of stuff wasn't going on. But man, I was really impressed with Jets mechanics, really impressed with all their mechanics. They look like they're already college quarterbacks from that perspective. But is there anything to take away from those camps? There was Elite 11, the opening, those go hand in hand. There was also I think Deion Sanders primetime camp or prime camp that went on this week as well. Is there anything to take away from those things?
Well, I mean, Jet did okay. He didn't really blow anyone out of the water. He made some really, really great plays, but he also screwed up two interceptions. But I don't know if I would take away a lot from this camp in particular. From what I saw, Jet was – he was pretty much forced to play a couple plays under center, which ultimately he looked pretty uncomfortable doing. And guess what? We run plays under center like every 1 in 200 plays.
Yeah.
I really don't feel like his performance at these camps running plays under center is going to be that big of an issue because, I mean, those camps, they are catered to a very, very general type of quarterback. And 7-on-7 specifically is much more of a pocket passing it caters to the pocket passing quarterbacks a lot more than it caters to the dual threat guys, which obviously Jet Duffy is. I mean, yeah, he didn't perform as well as we'd have hoped, didn't make the Elite 11, but I still think he's one of the better quarterbacks in the nation, whether he makes the Elite 11 or not. He showed off some really, really good skills, but I don't know if there's anything to really take away from this because we're not going to be using the same system that they used the Elite 11.
Right. I did see I saw a comment from someone, I forget where I saw it, but mentioned that Jet Duffy is about 3 inches away from having twice as many programs offering him scholarships back in February. But he just, from a size perspective, doesn't have the size that a lot of elite programs are looking for. They want that quintessential Tom Brady 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", guy, you know. But I agree on the camp thing. I think it's good just for those guys to get reps and to go against top competition, to know what top competition is prior to getting into D1 ball, because those are the type of guys that they're going to be going against every week. Outside of that, you know, I don't think there's big takeaways as fans. It was fun to watch. Unfortunately, they didn't show a lot of Jet Duffy, or they didn't show any of Jet Duffy's team on TV, so that was unfortunate. Didn't get to see him in action outside of highlights, but you know, at least it was some type of football on TV that we could watch.
Yeah, camps just suck in general. I'm sorry, they really do. I went through the recruiting process as recently as 2009, I went down to a rivals camp, went down to a camp at U of H, and man, like, it really does not matter how you perform. It matters your size, and for good reason. Like, you can't coach size. You can't coach, like, hey, kid, be bigger, have a bigger body frame. Can't really do that. So for a lot of kids, it really doesn't matter how well they perform if they don't have the body frame that someone's looking for. Like, in my experience, nobody's looking for a 5'9", 215-pound white defensive lineman. Like, you know, it's just the facts of life. And it's solid reasoning too. It doesn't matter how strong I am or how fast I am when I'm only 215 pounds. Some of those big 300-pound kids are just gonna, like, you know, pick me up and move me another place, and there's nothing I can really do about it.
Yeah.
So I see it, but for guys like Jet, when they already are, like, he's a proven commodity. He can ball pretty well, and he's looked really, really good on film when he's actually playing football. To be at a camp, not getting a lot of offers, that really doesn't mean anything at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's kind of similar in a sense to Combine for NCAA players going to the NFL or trying to get into the NFL. You know, they do some drills, but a lot of it is, how big are you? How tall are you? How much do you weigh? How strong are you? How fast are you? How high can you jump? The rest of it, as far as going out for receivers, running routes, catching the ball, blocking, those type things, they come secondarily to the actual physical attributes of the player. So I guess they're similar in that sense. All right, so outside of camps, we've got a couple other topics to hit on. This is something that Jonathan and I wrote about. He's going to get the article posted pretty soon. Preseason polls, because those are right around the corner from coming out, and wanted to get your thoughts. I'll touch on a little bit of what I wrote about, but wanted to get your thoughts first on preseason polls and what you think about them.
I'm going to take the middle route here. I'm kind of ambivalent. I really just don't care. Like, honestly, I don't expect someone else to care about what I think of their team. So I guess I just don't expect anyone else to care all that much. Like, we can sit here and debate for a zillion years whether it's TCU or Baylor who's going to win the Big 12. But ultimately, football games are not played on paper. They're played by people. They're played by ultimately fallible people who will make mistakes. And, you know, as we've seen, it only takes one bad day to knock a team out of contention for a championship. So while they have their place in just kind of like talking about stuff and hashing some stuff out, it makes for some interesting conversations, they don't really matter in the long run at all. So I mean, have them, sure, but just don't take too much from them.
Yeah, see, and that's the issue that I run into, and that's what I wrote in the article on my piece of it anyway, was it's great for media folks, it's great for bloggers like you and I, great for fans to have something to talk about. That's the only way that they are worth anything to me, because when it comes to actual playing of games, wins and losses end up really defining the season. It's like you said, it's not on paper. My issue, though, is that sometimes it does affect the end of season bowl games. Hasn't affected the college playoff yet, but we're only one year into that. But I looked back, and over the past 3 years, the AP and the coaches poll had both been right about 50% of predicting top five teams or ranking top five teams, 50% top 10 teams. Sorry. They hit about 50% of their top 10 teams in the preseason poll that ended up in the final top 10 at the end of the season. So they're not very good at predicting. My issue is that they can affect the outcome of the bowl games, because 2004, Auburn got left out of the national championship game. It was Oklahoma-USC, which Oklahoma got rolled by USC that year. But and it was all because preseason rankings. Auburn was 17 and 18, depending on what ranking you looked at. But they were 17 or 18 at the beginning of the season, and they could only get as high as number three. The voters weren't going to take Oklahoma out of that number two spot. They'd been there since day one from the polls. So it screwed Auburn out of a chance to win a national championship. They went undefeated. They won the SEC regular season and conference championship game. I don't know who deserved a better spot, but I hate the fact that because Oklahoma was ranked in the preseason poll number two, they're the ones who got the chance to play.
Yeah, to be fair, though, I really don't think that anyone beats that 2004 USC team. Oh, my gosh. Such like a we talk about, you know, the Alabama teams in 2009, 2010, LSU in 2011 on the defensive side of the ball, and, like, all this talent. And then we look back at 2004 at USC. Oh, my gosh. They had an NFL player at literally every position. Like, they were so stinking good. And it wasn't just like, oh, they had the talent. They had the talent. They had a really good scheme, really good coach in Pete Carroll. And they just played well together. Like, they're a bulldozer. I mean, only team to beat them in those 2 years, 2004, 2005, was, you know, Vince Young, who was one of the greatest college quarterbacks of all time in one of the best games of all time. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. And again, who says that Oklahoma wasn't the right choice to put in there? I'm not saying that. I'm just saying they got the nod only because of the preseason poll set them to, you know, be that number two team. So I didn't like that. But it would have been interesting. I mean, I agree. USC would have steamrolled somebody. But Auburn had the number one defense that year. I think that was the year Gene Chizik, that was actually a year before David Gibbs took over, funny enough. There's your tech reference. Took over at Auburn for Gene Chizik when he left that year and went to Texas. So there you go. Hey, we came full circle back around to the Red Raiders. So
here we are.
All right, so we'll do – you were on with – who was it? Mark Rogers the other day, and you guys were kind of ranking some Big 12 positions, right?
Yep.
So let's talk Big 12 positions. Last week, Drew and I did a little rapid-fire session on offense. This week, how about you and I jump in and do a little bit of defense? So give me your Big 12 best defensive coordinator.
Best defensive coordinator. Right now, I would have to go with Vance Bedford from Texas, only because the TCU defensive coordinators, they're breaking in a couple of co-guys. I mean, Vance has been with Charlie Strong for a while. You look at what he did for Louisville and that defense that they had over there, which wasn't incredible, but also they didn't have the most incredible talent. The coaching ability of Charlie Strong and his staff and the talent of Texas right now is just looking like a match made in heaven. I really don't think it's that long of a time before we start seeing Texas make some really, really big waves again, and not just on the offensive side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, we think Texas, we think Vince Young, we think Colt McCoy, but we forget, like, they had Brian Arakpo and Sergio Kendall as their bookend defensive ends 1 year. That's insane. They have Roy Miller at tackle, too. Oh my gosh, so many people. DJ Johnson, who's still in the league, I believe, with the Chiefs. Like, they had a lot of talent over there, and I think Bedford's one of the guys who's just going to get that done over the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's funny because there's some big names. You've got Phil Bennett at Baylor, who his defense has obviously not been good at Baylor, but he's for some reason in the coaching circles, and when defensive coordinator positions open up, he's a name that's tossed out quite a bit as being really good. Hasn't done much at Baylor, though. And then you got Mike Stoops, kind of same thing. He was good at Oklahoma, left, struggled at Arizona as a head coach, you know. So you've got David Gibbs coming in at Tech. And again, another good name. He's proven some things in his past. So you've got a lot of interesting names at the defensive coordinator. I agree, I'd go Vance Bedford. If I took the defensive coordinator out of that sentence and just say best defensive coach, I'd have to go Gary Patterson. That guy makes chicken salad out of not chicken crap, but he does it with with lesser talent. If you look at rivals rankings and all that, they haven't been bringing in four or five stars, but their defense is damn good every year. So
yeah,
all right, I like that. I would agree, Vance Bedford. All right, let's go to positions now. Give me defensive linemen.
Defensive lineman, I think this is a no-brainer. It's Andrew Billings out of Baylor. I mean, we hear Sean Oakman. We think all the hype surrounding him. He more than likely is a cyborg. I've said that on multiple occasions. He is the Terminator sent from Skynet to kill us all. Stay woke. Stay on the watch. But Andrew Billings can literally do it all. Returning all 12, returning all Big 12 defensive linemen. Just really good. He can do literally everything you want a defensive tackle to do. He really can stuff the run, and he can really get after the passer, which is something I feel like is lacking in Oakman, why I'm going Billings over Oakman. Oakman can make the really, really like big plays. He can make the sacks. He can make the big tackles behind the lines, but there is not a person in the Big 12 and potentially in the nation, with the exception of a couple of the defensive tackles out of Virginia Tech, that makes more of a consistent impact over the whole game than Andrew Billings. He really is a fantastic player.
So I was a little surprised. I knew you weren't as big an Oakman fan as others, but I thought maybe you were going to go Emmanuel Ogba out of Oklahoma State. He would get my vote, probably purely from a sack standpoint, pressure in the quarterback standpoint, and defensive tackles sometimes are overlooked because they don't put up big numbers, but that doesn't mean that they aren't just wreaking havoc every play like Billings does. But I don't know, if I had to go, I like Ogba. I just like what he brings to the table. I think we talked about this before, if there was one player to bring over, I think you actually said Ogba, and I'd love to have that guy on our defensive line opposite Pete Robertson. That would be a monster sack combo, I think.
Really good bookends.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, linebacker.
Eric Stryker. I mean, he just does everything. And once again, I am incredibly more partial to attacking linebackers who are consistent. Just consistency in general, I feel like that's what you need in the Big 12 and defensively overall. And Stryker can do it all. He can cover adequately, but he can really, really, really get after the passer. Like, he just excels in that aspect. He's just an overall really explosive player. But also, he falls under the consistency model more than a lot of people think.
Yeah, I agree. There was an SB Nation, I think it was, I don't think it was Football Study Hall, but someone wrote an article the other day about Eric Stryker. It was fascinating. So if you listeners want to read a good piece on Oklahoma's defense and how impactful Eric Stryker is, search SB Nation for it. It came out, I guess, about a week ago. But I agree on that. I'll throw a twist to this. I'm going to throw two names to watch at linebacker in the Big 12. One is Malik Jefferson, the freshman, true freshman at Texas. I think that guy will be a monster this year and the next year and the next year, and then leave for the NFL quickly thereafter. The guy, he is just phenomenal looking and apparently getting some rave reviews out of Texas already. So I would be prepared to have to deal with him if I were the Red Raiders for the next 3 years. The other one is our very own Micah Allway. I think that guy is going to have a hell of a year. Maybe not first team, all Big 12, anything like that, but I think everyone's going to walk away knowing who the defensive MVP of our team was this year. The guy is getting rave reviews from David Gibbs, really the only defensive guy that Gibbs has mentioned on more than one occasion. So I like Allway a lot. I think he's an anchor. What's going to be a surprisingly better defense this year? At least that's my hope.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Defensive back. Who you got?
Carl Joseph out of West Virginia. I've been a huge Carl Joseph fan for a while. And even though West Virginia's defense has struggled in the past, not necessarily last year, but in the years past, he has always been a really, really consistent player for them. And I'm going to shout consistency, consistency, consistency forever. Carl is just, he's a good player. Gets after the ball. It doesn't screw up in coverage very often.
A lot of people are picking West Virginia's defense to be pretty good, and him being one of the two big reasons for their defense being so good. The other one is that, and I don't know, I'm going to screw up his name, but the Nick Kowatski.
I believe that's pretty close.
Yeah, the linebacker. Yeah. So, they're picked by a few people, their defense, to surprise folks. So we'll see if they come through or not. But either way, Carl Joseph's a hell of a player. And just to be different, I'll take Zach Sanchez at Oklahoma. I think he is a phenomenal corner. I think I would love to have him opposite of Bethel, and you would almost be complete with two lockdown corners at that point. And man, if you can have two lockdown corners in the Big 12, you're off to a huge head start in trying to game plan against all the spread offenses out there. All right. An article I ran across earlier today, which kind of puzzled me. I was reading. It was from the Sporting News. They had their top 50 players in the nation ranked, newly updated, they said. And they had Trevon Boykin at number one. Am I crazy? Is that high? Am I the only one who thinks he's overrated? And I'm not trying to pick a fight with the TCU guys or anything, because I think he's a damn good player. It's nothing to do with that. I just wonder if he's the best. Is there not some other players out there better? Is this just the best quarterback on one of the best teams, Heisman type things going on?
And I don't know where to give. I don't know where to rank Boykin. I know he's one of the best in the Big 12, but nationally, I'm not sure. Number one in the nation, definitely not. I don't know who it goes to, but I do know that it isn't Trevon Boykin. I mean, you look at all of the all-Big 12 preseason lists for 2015, and especially on offense, there's a TCU player in every single one of them. There's at least three offensive linemen who are projected to have all-Big 12 seasons. They have two of the top five receivers in the Big 12, without a doubt, in Colby Lissenbee and, oh gosh, what's the other
one?
Josh Doctson. And they have an above-average running back in Aaron Green. I don't think he's the best in the Big 12, but I think he's top three. Yeah. So I don't really know where to put him. Yeah. But it's who is the catalyst for TCU? Is it their offensive lineman and running game? Is it their receivers being ridiculously open all the time? Is it Trevon Boykin throwing them open? It might just be a mix of all of them, and that none of them are incredible by themselves, but they're all pretty good together. I'd put the TCU offense as a whole at number one, but I don't think that gives them the number one quarterback necessarily, or the number one running back or wide receiver. But I do think they're very high up there. I don't think you're crazy is basically what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't think he's the number one player in the nation by a long shot.
Yeah, but I think it's that syndrome of he's a really good quarterback on a really good offense. So for that reason, he's elevated up. And I tell you, I think I've said this before. I think I said it last week when Drew and I were doing our little rapid fire thing. I think Doug Meacham is sadly underrated as a coach. He's their co-offensive coordinator along with Cumbie. And when they lose that dude after this season, I bet he's gone, because I said this last podcast, he interviewed at Tulsa, and he may have had another interview for a head coaching job, didn't end up getting or moving on. But I bet after this season he does, and I bet they feel that impact pretty quickly, because there have been a couple of coaches I've read articles on that said that he is the best game day decision maker when it comes to adjustments in the game and figuring out what the defense is doing really quick and figuring out a way to beat it really quick. So
even when TCU played Ole Miss, they didn't really destroy them offensively. They annihilated them defensively, were all over Bo Wallace. They held them to like 120 yards or something.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
But if I'm remembering something right, Boykin threw three picks in that game. They scored on a couple of really big trick plays and had a couple of really explosive stuff, but they were starting at like the Ole Miss 40 all the first half. It wasn't necessarily the TCU offense just crushing them and running it down their throat. The defense just gave them so many opportunities.
Yeah.
So I don't know if number one player in the nation, that's a big stretch.
Yeah. They had some other interesting people up there. They had one kid that I really like, the running back out of Georgia, Chubb.
Oh, he's good.
Really like that kid. Yeah, he was top five. Can't remember the others. Oh, JT Barrett was up there as well. which really the kid out of Wichita Falls. I really like him too. Man, they've got a killer trio up there. I'm not the biggest Braxton Miller fan, but I would take him on my team. I like the other two better. In JT and Cardell, I like both those guys better. But man, what a trio at quarterback.
Yeah. It's really good problem to have.
Yeah, right. I'd love that problem. All right, so one question. I'm going to toss you a curveball here. We didn't talk about this prior to jumping on and doing this podcast. Last question. Give me just a surprise of the Big 12 this year, whether it's a team, a player, a end of the season event. You know, Gary Patterson gets hired at Notre Dame. You know, something along those lines. Something just a little bit off the wall. Is there any prediction you can give us? I know.
Dang.
Caught you off guard on that one, didn't I?
A little bit. I'll say this. Kansas wins three games. I really like Neil Beattie, and I feel like the ceiling is very, very low for them. So I'm going to make a little bit of a stretch, but something that isn't completely unreasonable, like Kansas making a bowl. I think Kansas wins 3 to 4 games.
Not in the Big 12, just overall, right? You're saying
overall.
Okay.
Three to four games they'd have to at least get a couple Big 12 wins. I think they shock someone, and I think they take Iowa State. They might shock Kansas State. I think K-State's going to be really, really down this year. I'll combine Kansas winning 3 or 4 with this. I don't think Kansas State finishes higher than 8th of the Big 12 this year. They are losing so much. They lose Tyler Lockett. They lose their defensive captain, who's a 4-year starter, losing a bunch of 4-year starters on that side of the ball. No quarterback. They have a couple of offensive linemen returning, but ultimately that's it. And as good as the Purple Wizard is, I don't think he can do much with a lot of underclassmen playing.
Dude, he's got Gronk, though. He's got Gronk Jr.
He's got him and nobody else. So just throw to Gronk. That's your offense. Yeah. Well, that's the Patriots' offense for a while. So it could work.
There you go. There you go. All right, man. Well, hey, appreciate your time, Hunter. And like I said, guys, we will be back right around the first week of August to jump into fall camp. We'll actually have maybe some football news. Hopefully within the first couple weeks of August, we'll know who's going to be the quarterback. We all assume it's Mahomes, but it would be nice to have confirmation of that. So all sorts of fun stuff kicking off the first week of August. We'll be back. Thanks again, Hunter. If you guys have questions, feel free to comment at the bottom of this podcast. We will get them answered when we are with you guys next time. Thanks for support.
Take it easy, y'all.